91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. In the words of iconoclast Texas country music figure Kinky Friedman, quote, "Money can buy you a fine dog, but only love can make him wag his tail." Good afternoon. It's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. We're at your service this hour about pets, and we'll take your calls about our favorite pals. We have veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic, as well as canine and feline behavior expert Adele Mieres. What about your pet in the holidays? First, do not give someone a pet out of the blue. It can spell a miserable existence. Also, consider how your pet might react to the seasonal hustle and bustle. And even pets can overeat during the holidays. Stay tuned. Topical Currents up next after the news.
And welcome back, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. It's today's Topical Currents. Well, we're at your service this hour, and we'll take questions and comments about pets. With us is veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke of the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. Our number 1-800-743-9576. Dr. Kupke, you've been traveling a lot, and you're waiting for our listener audience to question you.
It's wonderful to be here. Happy holidays to everyone.
Back from Africa and all the wilds.
Yes. Also with us is canine trainer and behavior expert Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. And he can also address feline behavior issues. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thanks for having us.
Again, our number 1-800-743-9576. So the holidays are upon us, and once again, we have our experts on hand for holiday issues concerning our beloved pets or pets to be, and when not to add a pet to the household, how to help our pets deal with the chaos of the holidays, how to limit holiday weight gain to ourselves and not our pets, and more. So let's begin with Dr. Kupke. You say it's rarely recommended that new pets be introduced to the household during the holidays. Why?
It's tough on them. The excitement and chaos of the holidays usually brings visitors to the house, family members that the pets have never met before, so they don't even know their family. And this time of year, they're welcoming all these strangers into the house, and they're expected to be okay with it. So we see a lot of behavioral issues. We expect the long-lost aunt that we never actually visit to be accepted by our pets without question, and the dog actually reacts to this person as a complete stranger. Why is that a surprise?
Yeah, right. Your blood.
You know, right, you know, and it's especially true when pets are given to children. Children tend to be very excited during this time of year, rightly so, but it's a very strange environment to introduce a dog to a brand new place. Full of strange people, strange sounds, strange routines. There's a lot of adjustments. I'm actually surprised we don't see more behavioral problems with these new pets. It's actually more of a miracle that so many of them adjust so well.
Well, surely no one would buy a puppy or a kitten and just come in and say surprise to someone, would they?
Well, it's done.
It's done.
It's done all the time. And you know, most of the time, pet store purchases tend to be impulse buys. Most of the clients that come to me with a pet store puppy, they popped in just to have a look. And they fell in love with this poor little waif, fell in love with them, wanted to rescue them from the pet store, and poof, brand new dog. A lot of the time, these pet stores aren't really that familiar with where the puppies are coming from. They may be unwittingly selling puppies from puppy mills.
Or sometimes they do know.
You know, sometimes they do know. And of course, the whole puppy mill issue is that the animals are mass produced without any regard for health or genetic soundness of the puppies. Puppy mill puppies tend to be more prone to congenital problems, which basically means big vet bills, as well as a lot of heartache. Because obviously you're going to fall in love with this little thing. And whilst there is something in Florida which allows you a 14-day time period to return the dog, this is not like returning a faulty computer. You've fallen in love with this little thing, and
right.
Now you want to help her or him. And you might actually find you're going to deal with a lifetime of complex medical problems. The other thing, too, of course, is more likelihood of behavioral issues, anxiety, aggression. So we don't really encourage people to get puppies from a pet store. If you're going to adopt for the holidays, we really do encourage people to look at shelters. And there's a lot of myths about shelters. One of the most common myths is that all you're going to get is a mutt. There's lots of purebreds in shelters. There really is.
A big percentage of them.
Percentage of them. And generally speaking, whereas the return rate to for pet store puppies is rather horrendous, adopted pets are rarely returned to the shelters.
Why do you think that is?
I think because people who are going to shelters have a different mindset. They're actually, their starting point is different. They're looking for somebody that needs a home. Whereas when you go to a pet store, it tends to be an impulse buy. You just see suddenly a dog that says something to you and you think, I want this. And that's it. And maybe you've never even been thinking about getting a dog until then. Whereas I think it's more of a proactive thing that comes from a need when you go.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in with Dr. Ian Cuppy or Adele Mietis, we're talking about pets and pets' behavior. Our number, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, you can email Bonnie at radio@WLRN.org.
Well, I just, for the heck of it, because, you know, often I talk to people that say, well, they want a breed-specific animal, and, you know, perhaps there weren't any in the shelter that day. So just for the heck of it, I went online to look at breed-specific rescue organizations in our area. And just to name a few that came up, just in case you think that your particular dog that you're looking for does not have a rescue organization: Siberian Huskies, Shih Tzus, Rottweilers, Great Danes, Yorkies, Greyhounds, Dachshunds, Beagles, Collies, and Shelties, Golden Retrievers, Dobermans, Miniature Pinschers, Pit Bulls, and the list goes on: Alaskan Malamutes, German Shepherds, wow. and Beagles, and Boxers. So if you are looking for a dog, there probably is a rescue organization from which you can get it rather than going to a breeder or a pet store.
Exactly. And the internet is actually a marvelous gift for the rescue cause, because now people can go to their computer and pull this information up in a jiffy, whereas before they used to have to go around and ask and research. And really, I think it does segue to another point. Before you choose a breed, make sure that the temperament of that breed matches who you are, not who you hope to be. That's some point I've made in this program before. A lot of the time people buy a high-energy dog because they have ambitions to be high-energy people, but in their heart of hearts, they're not high-energy people. And if you're not a high-energy person...
So the walking suffers and...
Well, exactly. If you acquire a high-energy dog, that dog, by their nature, is going to require a long walk every night. And a long walk is defined by minimum 40 minutes. I'm sure Adele would probably say longer. If you don't walk, say, a Malinois every single day, that dog will wind themselves so tight that you're going to have some issues, because they're high-energy, high-output dog.
I got to say, even on that point, you don't have enough feet to walk a Malinois.
Right.
They're really, really high-drive dogs. So those dogs are going to need more than just a walk. They're actually going to need some more structure work. Perhaps a little bite work with a tug, some work with a ball. So some even need... even more than a walk, they actually need some additional behavior structure work that will actually make them release a lot of that energy and drive.
Yeah. So what's a good way for somebody to match their nature to their animal?
Well, you know, two ways right away is ask, have a chat with your vet, have a chat to Adele or one of Adele's people. We can, in 4 minutes or less, guide you into the right direction. It's not difficult, but it's like a lot of things in life. It's often better to get somebody from outside your sphere of influence to assess and guide, because oftentimes we're not as self-aware as we think.
And how about if I'd like to have a full-sized dog, or at least a medium-sized dog, not a little carrion animal?
Sure. Sure.
But I don't want to get into a major walking situation. What would I look for? And would I try and get a more mature dog rather than a puppy?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, a more mature dog would likely require less work. Even my Malinois, now at 10 years of age, she's a different dog than she was at three.
A Malinois?
Finally, Malinois, my Belgian Malinois, yes. Yeah. Like a police dog. They're like cousins of the shepherds, and they're very, very high drive. But, you know, back to your question there, it's a very valid concern. So when you're looking for a dog, I mean, a few basic things would be you want to make sure you get the coat that you need if you tend to be more allergic or if you have an issue with dog hair or other members. You'd probably be limited to a dog that, like a Wheaton Terrier or a Poodle, that doesn't shed as much as other dogs. And you may need also to look at activity levels of that dog, the age of that dog, to make sure that it does match your lifestyle.
Let's take a quick call before we break in about a minute and a half. Marianne, she's in Hallandale. Hello, Marianne.
Yeah, hello. I have an Akita mix 65-pound dog, and for years I had two dogs, 13 years together, 35-pound chow mix. The chow mix is gone now, and I want to introduce a new dog, but this Akita was such an alpha and so aggressive with the other dog. I'm wondering what's the best way to introduce, because she's not friendly with other animals, so what's the best way to introduce a new pet to this Akita who's been always the alpha female?
Hi, Marianne. Thanks for your call. This is, it's kind of difficult to just say, okay, this is the best way to do that without actually meeting the dog. So right off the bat, I'd just like to say once we actually meet the dog, we'll have a better idea specifically for that dog. But in many cases, one of the best ways is that you have a little bit more control over your dog. So you do a little basic obedience, get your dog to walk with no pulling at your side, first without any distractions, and then with distractions at a distance. You may try this by being at a dog park and being at a distance from the entrance, for example. And the dog may see other dogs coming in and out of a car many feet away, and then from there you can judge the dog's reaction. You can see if you're ready to move in further. One of the real basic things before you actually have a dog meet another dog is we tend to do kind of like a little cradle with a leash that goes under the belly to be able to swing the other dog's butt around to the other dog's nose, because that's the way they meet. And that way they can kind of go nose to butt each way. So it's easier actually shown than trying to explain it. But there are a few different techniques that
we could use. As far as bringing another dog home, I want to get another pet to be at home. So I meant as far as her accepting another dog in our household.
Mary, I would have your dog, if you're going to see it, check out other dogs, go to rescues that are going to be, or a foster place that's going to be open to you bringing your dog and meeting the other dog. Oh. And they may have trainers that they work with. I know I work with many of the local rescue groups, and we help with that quite a bit.
Maybe the smell will be right.
I have a question, though, for you, Marianne. Mm-hmm. Why do you want another dog if your Akita doesn't?
Well, because I had two dogs. The other dog just was stolen recently, and she seems very lonely. I mean, even though she was aggressive with the other dog, she was like, you know, the leader. So she's lonely, and I want to get another dog, but it was just the two of them for 13 years. So she accepted that other dog, but she does, her personality has changed since the other dog is gone.
I see.
And I just think that she's used to having another dog, but it's just going to be hard for her to get used to a strange dog. Because it was just the two of them for that many years, and she really, you know, she whipped him into, you know, he kind of knew. He was 35 pounds, she's 65 pounds. Even though he was the male, she is in charge, and she has to be in charge, and she can be aggressive. So I just was worried about bringing a puppy or just another dog and trying to get her to get used to this new dog.
Okay, well, good luck.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, we're at your service with Dr. Ian Kupke and Adele Mieres, and we'll be right back with your calls.
And we return. It's Topical Currents at your service. We're talking about pets and pet care, pets' behavior. We have veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke of the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall, and also behavior expert canine trainer Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. And Bonnie, you say we have an emailer. Do you want to go to that?
Yeah, we can go to the emailer. This is from Joyce. I just received a tragic diagnosis for my beloved 7-year-old boxer. He was diagnosed with degenerative neurological disease and given about a year before his situation just gets to the point where he won't be able to walk at all. Anyway, I'm trying to do what I can for him to keep him active, including physical therapy and food supplements. I know these won't cure him or change his situation, but I'm trying. Anyway, as a result of his condition, his hind legs slide on my tile floor. I don't know what to do. I've bought little booties for him for traction. I put down some yoga mats. I'm considering putting some carpeting down. But the problem is I have a younger boxer that chews everything and can't get him to stop chewing the dog bedding. He chewed on an expensive area rug. Any suggestions for this situation? There are two things there.
Well, that should take up the rest of the hour.
Yeah, right. Well, no. Okay.
Definitely, as far as the younger one goes, we need to make sure that that younger one gets more of the attention and structure and obedience work that's going to make the older one's life a little bit better in a short life that he may have remaining. For the older one, you may want to look into a cart. If everything else is okay and the doctor says that he can move around with the front legs, you may want to look into a cart. They have custom-made carts. There's local people that make them, typically out of PVC, and they're very sturdy. As far as the young one goes, though, there's definitely some work with obedience and structure work to be done with that one, just to begin with, to make your life easier and the life of your older pet as well.
And we'll go back to our telephone calls. Lydia in Fort Lauderdale. Hello there.
Hi there. This program is wonderful and very timely. I have two dogs. One is a 15-and-a-half-year-old cocker who's on her last leg. The other is an 11-year-old rescue Catahoula. He's been attached to my 15-and-a-half-year-old, and I'm toying around with bringing in a third dog so that he can be accommodated at the time of her passing. That's part A. Part B is, what are your thoughts on bringing the Catahoula to the euthanization when it becomes necessary, or if it becomes necessary?
What is a Catahoula?
A Catahoula leopard hound is a type of hunting dog.
Oh, he is the best.
They're
dog
large.
I have ever had.
They're rather large dogs. They tend to get very protective, actually.
Yes.
You know, my thought on this, and this might be just a matter of opinion, but my thought on this is that you should let that Catahoula enjoy the older cocker, and not bring in a third dog that's going to throw off the dynamic at this stage of the cocker's life.
Yeah.
And you don't have to really take the Catahoula to euthanization. It's not going to make a huge difference one way or the other. They get past, they actually have closure a little bit faster than we do. However, they go through a grieving process just the same, so you may see some differences, and that's a time to spend a little bit more time with your Catahoula, perhaps take them on longer walks, or be able to spend extra time playing with a ball or a toy, something that they may like. And then when the time comes, it might be a couple weeks later, might be a couple months later, but when the time comes, you can start looking around for another dog that's going to be compatible in some of the local rescue groups, and
right,
there's many that would be willing to work with you on that.
The other issue, and the reason why I asked about the euthanization, is I recently took my little one to the vet, and my stepson called me, and he said that my big one was freaking out and looking out the door and whining. So he knows something's up. I mean, obviously he does.
Part of what you may want to do to make this process a little easier is spend a little bit more individual time with each dog away from the other, so they can start getting used to the separation. Perhaps taking the Catahoula on long walks without the other dog might be something to look into.
That's what I've been doing, because the other dog doesn't walk far anyway.
Okay, we
I
have to
appreciate
run.
That. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. We move along to Barbara. She's in Coral Springs. Hi there.
Hi, this is Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Barbara.
Yes, I actually have two rescue dogs, and I have a younger male rescue dog, of course, neutered, who barks furiously at anyone approaching the house. The other rescue dog, she just copies whatever he does. So I don't think she's particularly agitated until she hears him barking, and then we have this very loud, very aggressive barking for anyone who comes to the door. So some of my family members think that we should be disciplining them so that they don't bark at people coming to the door. And my feeling is that they're dogs, and we want to know when people are coming to the door. Is there a happy medium here?
Yeah, there actually is a happy medium. It's very simple. You teach the dogs what a quiet command means, and you have the dogs bark so you don't want them to bark anymore. You tell them quiet, and then they're quiet. That's the easiest way of dealing with that.
You just tell them quiet?
Well, you
does that take professional help to accomplish that, though?
A lot of times.
But, I mean, you know, just simply...
Hold
them, or you...
In this situation, you'd work with one dog at a time. You would provide the trigger, not wait for the trigger to happen. The trigger would be something like somebody knocking on a door, maybe just walking
by.
Or
ring the doorbell.
Ring the doorbell.
The doorbell, yeah.
Things like that are triggers that'll make them bark. So you work with one dog at a time and teaching what a quiet command may be. So depending on your dog's motivation, we'd have to either use a ball, a squeaky toy, sometimes a treat. Sometimes we just walk them away from the area with the leash, and then when they look, then we praise them, and we tell them good quiet at that point. So okay. It's just a process in teaching them what that quiet means. In most cases, I do this in one lesson, and then from there forward, the dogs would know at least that when they're told to be quiet, they need to be quiet. You know, one of the things that a lot of people overlook on this is the dogs may end up barking so much that then they redirect energy, and dogs that would have never gotten into a fight end up getting into a fight, and uh-huh. Then a lot of times that's when they call me in. So just don't take it lightly and take some action towards this.
You know, okay. Go ahead.
Well, they would still bark at someone that we didn't want in the house, right?
Absolutely.
As long as we didn't give them the command.
Absolutely. You can still get them to continue barking, sure.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Call. What about people, and I've seen this so many times, where dogs are barking out of control, and they scream and tell the dogs to stop barking, but they're screaming.
Yeah, that's terrible. You know, I always say, here's a Cuban dude saying, don't speak loud to your dog.
Yeah.
How ironic is that? But yeah, you don't want to be screaming. If the dogs hear screaming, if they hear frustration in your voice, they will end up not responding to you. They actually see you as less of a leader if that happens that way.
Okay.
Yeah. Just as an aside, I have two dachshunds. Dachshunds bark. I actually had Adele over at our house, and literally this is what happens. He creates an alert, doorbell, knock on the door. And you teach them to say, basically what you're doing is saying, thank you for the alert, you're done now. And as the leader, so to speak, you're basically saying, okay, I've got this.
So you give them praise at the beginning of the barking and then say, but now quiet.
If they start the barking and you want to continue encouraging that barking, you would give praise. In most cases, you don't have to really praise for the barking, because barking is what they want to do, especially the dachshund.
Yes.
However, when you correct from that, when you say, okay, hey, that's enough, and then immediately they stop and you praise that, good boys and girls, good quiet, then you can condition the dog that that's indeed what you want them to do.
Okay, before we break, Bonnie has
okay.
an email.
Okay, yeah, just Lisa wants to second the fact about buying from a pet store, which she says never to do. And this is good to remember this time of year, if in fact you do want a pet. PetSmart does not sell dogs and cats, but has a reputable rescue organizations come in every weekend. And she's fond of Friends Forever, who this woman D, who charges, but just enough to get the dog or cat, I guess, checked out and spayed or neutered. You wanted to add something?
Right. Yeah. No, there's a number of different rescue groups that work with different pets.
Right.
Dee's definitely been doing it a long time. I've known Dee for many years. And there's, you know, she deals with many different breeds as well. And within that same PetSmart, there's also other groups. I think Paws for You and a number of other
right.
groups as well. So it's definitely a very good idea to look into those rescue groups before you ever think about purchasing.
Right. And I would throw in too that to make sure you get your new pet checked out quickly after the adoption. I say within 2 or 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
To make sure that everything's okay.
Well, they have that animal hospital right there. Maybe you could do it right there before you even take them home, you know?
Sure, absolutely. When you work with some of these veterinarians within like the Banfields and so forth that are kind of like chain or franchises, What happens a lot of times, you end up not getting the same doctor, perhaps not the same kind of care. But for shots and things like that, that's good. If you need a more thorough diagnosis, I think perhaps more a private vet would probably be a better option.
Okay. We are talking about animals and holidays with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mietes of Canine Advisors. We'll come back with more.
Minutes past 1 o'clock. It's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We continue taking your calls for Dr. Ian Kupke, veterinarian of the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall, and also canine trainer and behavior expert Del Mietes of Canine Advisors. Our number 1-800-743-9576. We have a few lines open. 1-800-743-WLRN. Email, that's radio at WLRN.org. Next up, it's Ray in Miami. Hello, Ray.
Yes, hello there.
Go ahead.
You hear me well?
Yep.
We hear you, Ray.
Okay, thank you. I have a question for the doctor. I have, my wife and I own, we have 5 cats in the house that go in and out. You know how they are. They like to spend some time out. They come back in and so on. We have a female cat that has a problem with, and the only one that has this problem is she's got a, develops a rash on her back, and she has a lot of hair loss. And we've taken her to the veterinarian, but it becomes almost habitual. Every month and a half, it starts occurring again. She gets cured with the injection, but, you know, it also becomes very expensive. After a while,
did I hear a meow?
I heard a kitty in the background.
Yeah, I have one here right next to me. You know, she's wanting me to pet her and, you know, give her some love here. But she's a Siamese. Anyway, she's not the one that's, you know, giving me this problem. But the thing is that we'd like to know if we can buy the medication and apply the medication ourselves instead of having to go almost every month and spend $45, $50, $60. Just to, you know, take care of this situation. It's only one cat, and she develops a very bad rash. It gets reddish and loses hair, and apparently it's causing her a strong itch. Yes. And but she gets cured for a little bit when she gets the shot. I'd like to know if there's a solution that I can use at the home.
Well, the challenge you're facing is with them being indoor-outdoor. They're being exposed to an environment you won't necessarily control. A rash can be due to many, many things. It can be due to a form of mange. It can be due to fleas, and it can be due to fungal infections or allergies. Now, the fact that it's going away with a shot suggests to me, and as I said, I can't be sure, but it suggests to me that the shot for that's lasting 45 days is probably an anti-inflammatory, which would make me deduce it's an allergy.
Yes, that precisely that is what the doctor said it was, but I wish I could do something to make it better.
So the first protocol always is a decent flea preventative. You may not even see a flea on your kitty, but cats that are horrendously allergic to fleas will be allergic to one flea bite. You'll never see the flea because the kitty swallowed the flea. So best flea preventative I'm familiar with is Revolution, but it is a prescription product, and you need to buy it from a veterinarian. In my experience, pretty well all the over-the-counter cat flea preventatives are not terribly good.
What about keeping the one cat indoors?
That would be ideal.
Yeah, that's...
That would be ideal. But in my experiences as a practitioner, I find that it's not always easy to make a cat that's used to going in and out.
Oh.
But I would at least try. Because if you can actually teach her to be an indoor-only kitty, you may have actually nipped the problem in the bud right there.
Well, she spends a lot of time indoors. She hardly goes out. But, when you know, it's not that when she goes out, she gets the rashes. It's present most of the time. And the doctor has indicated that it is a analogy, mm-hmm. and I just don't know if he's able to give us a cure where we can play it at the house, because I'm afraid to invade his privacy at the same time. Maybe it's something that he prefers for us to go in there he's been our veterinarian for many, many years for many mm-hmm. pets. We have also two dogs. We have a Weimaraner and a Dachshund Dapple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're fine, and they're cute. They're very healthy.
Yeah. Okay, we have a lot of callers, Ray. Good luck.
I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Ray, thank you.
Thanks for your call.
David has four adopted rescue cats, and just wants to make a few points. Before I got my first cat, I asked friends I consider responsible animal stewards for recommendations about a veterinarian. I suggest you bring home an animal you plan to commit to for the remainder of the helpless animal's life that you ask around, briefly visit, and speak to prospective vets in your area. Discuss your home lifestyle and expectations from the companion you intend to bring home and establish a relationship with the professional. Maybe even their thoughts about where to source your new friend and bring your animal into the home is like accepting responsibility for an infant child for a very long time.
Right.
I agree with that.
I agree with that. I think that sometimes I'm asked, what do people look for in a veterinarian? And of course, obviously, I would love everyone to come to me. But realistically, what would I say to somebody living in Palm Beach? Find a vet that you feel comfortable with and you trust. Find a vet that your friends trust. Find a place there where there's a good pet-loving energy. I'm a big fan of supporting small businesses. I think that the very best vets out there run their own small business, because therefore you fly or die by your integrity.
Right.
I have a little ethical question I'd like you both to address. Let's say I have an obviously homeless stray animal on or near my property. Perhaps it's a kitten that's mewing. Yet you know you can't take it in, mm-hmm. but you don't want it to suffer. What do you do?
Well, yeah. I would say find a rescue who can help, because some cats are very adoptable. We know we have a good friend who would basically take that cat in, and if it was adoptable, she would be able to turn that cat into a cat with a loving home in a matter of days.
What about an adult stray dog that's obviously malnourished? And
I would find a rescue, because they're set up to deal with that. You know, they have sources of medical care, and the problem is the intake end. If you're a person looking to adopt a dog, you're not going to know that Joe Cooper knows a dog.
But if I take that dog and put it in my garage to find the rescue, then it's been 3 or 4 days, and all of a sudden now he's mine.
Well, maybe it's time for a dog.
Yeah, you know.
Failed foster parents are the best.
Yeah.
They fail at being foster, so they keep them.
It's a tricky one. You know, I've lived in many different places. I've lived in places where the local animal services actually have a service provider who comes and picks up the dog. Our animal control will do that if you have the dog physically at your place, but they won't go and catch the dog.
Yeah, but what will be the fate of that dog if it's not adopted?
Depends on its adoptability, and that's a cruel, a harsh thing to say, but some dogs are more adoptable than others, and it's nothing to do with breed. It's to do with their medical condition, sometimes temperament. Rescues have a tough mission, because in theory, ideally, all pets should be found homes, but it's not always possible.
I just want to say, here in Dade County, though, it does have a lot to do with breed, because they can find a perfectly adoptable dog, super sweet, other dogs, likes dogs, cats, and kids, and everything. And if that dog conforms to the standards of a pit bull, that dog doesn't get to see the light of day in Miami-Dade County. It gets put down. If they couldn't transfer it out of the shelter, it will get put down.
Realize, too, just as a lateral leap, we live in a different age where you can actually present that dog via your social media contacts. Thanks to vehicles like Facebook, mm-hmm. we can access thousands of people we didn't used to be able to. You could post a picture of the dog on your site, And suddenly you're reaching people who are reaching people who are reaching people, ripples.
And that list I read from, if it's one of those, you know, if it's a dog, if it's a, you know, if you recognize it's a Dalmatian or it's a boxer or whatever, you call the rescue organization.
That's an important point. Like Dalmatian is Patty Dane. She's the only one that runs Dalmatian Rescue. If you were to find a Dalmatian, she couldn't take it in and you would foster, she would help you actually. And she would do what's called a courtesy posting and put that dog on her website and take inquiries and applications, even if it's actually not one of the dogs under her rescue. A lot of local rescue groups do courtesy postings, and some of the best things there is that they have access to, as a nonprofit, to put these pictures and descriptions in a wonderful website called PetFinder.com.
We'll try and put some listings on our Topical Currents Facebook page.
Right, PetFinder.com, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And that way, your dog now that you're
making
trying to place...
a little work for our online producer.
Yes.
Your dog can now be cross-posted, let's say, across different rescue groups and different websites, including PetFinder, which is a major rescue website.
Right.
Okay, one more call before we break. This is Ivan in Miami. Go ahead, Ivan. You're on the air. Ivan, you're on the air. Okay. We'll move along to Marlene in Miami. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
This is Marlene.
Hi, Marlene. You're live.
Okay. I wanted to ask about arthritis in dogs and what the doctor recommends. Is there any cure? Is there anything I can do that would make the dog more comfortable? And when would I know that it's time not to let the dog suffer anymore?
Mm. Well, there's actually quite a lot available to help a pet live with arthritis. There is no cure. That's not something we have yet. But when I face a patient with arthritis, one of the first things you can do is make sure they're not overweight. A dog that's overweight is going to suffer much more seriously with arthritis than a dog that's than trim, lean, and fit. And to get a dog to an ideal weight sometimes takes a little bit of work, assessing their underlying health with blood tests, looking at their diet, and so forth. Something that your veterinarian can certainly walk you through. In terms of medication, there's various oral supplements that are excellent. I recommend one. We have a joint support that I see dramatic enhancements of a dog's ability to move around and be fluid and mobile. And for advanced cases, there is actually an injectable medication called Adequan that I've actually used on my own little dog who's getting to a stage where she needs a little bit of help, and that can also make the fluid that the that supports the joints more viscous, more fluid, more oily, and basically help them with mobility. But it's something you really need to sit down with your veterinarian and come up with a plan. But there's a lot of exciting things to help pets with arthritis today.
One more short break on Topical Currents with Dr. Ian Kupke and Adele Mieres, and we'll be right back.
Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Adele Mieres, and Dr. Ian Kupke. We're taking your calls about pet care, Topical Currents, at your service. This is Ivan. You find that funny? Ivan in Miami. Hey there, go ahead.
Hey, I'm here. How you doing? Good question. I'm looking for a dog that's hypoallergenic. I'm not sure if there's such a dog out there. I hear there's, you know, the allergen can be in their saliva and as well as their dander. So my allergies are pretty severe. So anytime, you know, I can't even get near a rescue dog. So I'm looking towards purchasing a high price, you know, Maltese or a Cavapoo or... but I'm not sure that would actually prevent me from breaking out into a rash or sneezing. So I don't know. Is there a dog out there that's truly hypoallergenic?
There are dogs that are less allergenic. I think the first step would be to find out if you can, is it the hair that's offending you or something else? Because there are dogs out there, breeds that don't shed. There are hairless breeds out there Mexican hairless is one. Chinese crested hair is practically naked. So if it's the hair that's offending, Chinese crested is the dog for you, because basically there's not a lot of hair on those dogs. It would make sense, if I were in your position, I would probably find a rescue that dealt with one of the hairless breeds and basically go and hang out and see how your allergies are, because it is very, very committal to adopt a dog, and it would be very unfair for everybody if it turned out that you simply couldn't tolerate it. But I would basically volunteer to work with certain breeds and see how things go.
That's excellent advice.
Yeah.
And we move along to Bishelli. Forgive me if that's wrong. Hi.
It's Bishelli. That's okay.
Hi.
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 Go ahead.
How can we help you?
We're introduced.
Oh, alrighty. Well, basically, I am calling about my small mixed breed, Emmy. She's a sweetheart, but she has a very... She had a hard start in life. She was severely abused, we're assuming, by a man. And since she is afraid of basically all things male, including even children, but she's better with children. The older you are, the taller you are, and the more male you are, that's the trouble. But she was actually found with her brother. He had a bit... more physical damage done to him. His mouth was wired shut, and unfortunately he did not make it after he was adopted out. He ended up getting hit by a car. But I only have her since she was 6 months old. She's made a lot more progress. She loves my father now, bit him, the vegetarian, when she first got him, or, you know, we first got her. But she's very timid when it comes to new people, and she is better about
Adele,
the male
can you thing. Handle this getting more and more complicated? Let's
sorry about
start,
that.
Start the beginning of it.
It sounds like she's probably
stressed by men.
Right. Had bad experiences with men before. One of the important things would be to have her have some positive experiences. We want to find some things that really motivate her. Perhaps like a really high value treat, you know, a little piece of steak or cooked chicken. That we can associate with some men at a lower level, perhaps laying down on the floor all the way down low with a treat out on their palms, so it's not threatening at all to the puppy, and then little by little luring that dog in with the individual perhaps standing up little by little, coming up kind of seated and then perhaps on their knees little by little like that, so that the interaction with men is only positive ongoing. So you got to undo some of the previous experiences, basically.
Let's try one of your emails.
This is Eric. I've had the experience that a dog who had bonded absolutely needed to experience the death of the first dog who was euthanized. She licked the face of her departed brother for a few minutes, then walked away. After the euthanization, she adjusted very quickly to the death. Previously, even when the older dog was absent for a short time, she became extremely agitated, upset, and searched the house for him. So that's interesting.
Yeah. A lot of times they go through their own changes. I've never personally had that experience. I've always had dogs since the day I was born, and never really had to have one dog, see the euthanization of another dog or lick their face. But if it worked in that case for that dog, that may have been very well. It might have been the best thing for that dog. I'm not sure that we can say that that's going to be the right thing for every dog.
Mm-hmm. Before, just Dr. Kupke, can you briefly touch on what to keep away from animals? Holidays, the tinsel, the chocolate, the foods, the the candles.
This is a tough time of year for our pets, a lot of changes, a lot of things dug out from storage to be put on display, decorations and so forth. Of course, tinsel, I don't think you can even buy tinsel anymore, but tinsel was a nightmare for cats. Any cat owner should never have tinsel in the house, because they swallow the tinsel, it ends up getting gathered in their intestinal tract, they end up needing emergency surgery. Last year, we had a wonderful little Jack Russell Border who ended up having an acute onset anemia because it turned out he ate a stuffing mix under the tree. Turns out the stuffing mix had onions. Onions are highly toxic to dogs, so you'd never want to give a dog table food that has onions in it. This is something we all do. We all cook with onions. Don't give onions to your dog. Likewise, garlic, grapes, raisins, chocolate, alcohol, caffeinated beverages, fried, fatty, seasoned stuff.
I just thought of that.
Basically.
St. Bernard in that, what was that series that always had the flask of alcohol?
Beethoven?
No. Remember Marion and George? Topper.
Yeah.
With the, anyway, go on, I'm sorry.
No, well, but basically a lot of the things that we think are benign are not to dogs. You know, who doesn't love chocolate? But dark chocolate is highly toxic to dogs. Cooking debris, a very common one. When we're finished our holiday cooking, you can't leave your garbage bags where pets can reach them. They're very, very acutely aware of scents. They will find that turkey carcass, eat it, and then you'll be seeing me for emergency surgery. So,
how about an email address?
SableChaseVet, SableChaseVet at gmail.com.
And
how about Canine Advisors?
Canine Advisors, letter K, number 9, advisors, ADVISORS.com.
And let's take another call. We're getting close to the end of our program. Ask these callers to please be brief. Ava in Fort Lauderdale, hi.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking my call. I have a terrier mix that I have just recently adopted. She's 1.5. She seems to be very high energy, so I run her along while I ride my bike twice a day. But she still chews and digs and seems to bark a lot and pull, even though we're working on walking without pulling. Is it because she's a very mischievous sort of breed, or her age, she's still young? What else can I do to keep her a little bit more calm?
It sounds like a real classical case of just trying to tire the dog down as opposed to trying to have the dog think with their mind a little bit. So you can actually have some structured play exercises that you can do that'll probably take a lot less than running the dog around for a few miles. But what you want to do is just kind of like with a little ball on a string, for example, have the dog chase it around, and then when they really want to go get it, then you make them do something for you, like sit, for example, shake, and then they have to stay there, and you call them over to you, and then they can get the little ball. So that kind of interaction there, you're making them really want something, and then all of a sudden you need to have them implore some impulse control, in which then they can't reach it until they give you something that you want them to do. So they have to really be aware of what it is that you want from them, and you would change up these commands. Those are little structured play exercises that we generally use in most of the trainings with high drive dogs.
Another Thanksgiving tip that somebody has given me, Thanksgiving, No dog should get turkey skin, poultry bones, onions, grapes, raisins, fatty foods, or other holiday items. And also watch what you leave out as far as leftovers. I know dogs aren't averse of getting on a counter.
Well, no. And we didn't get to talk about obesity. We're only... we gain weight during the holidays and not our pets, but obesity is a big issue, so...
Well, the big problem there is that we introduce sudden changes in diet because we want to give our pets their leftovers,
right.
And that's a mistake. If you want to treat your dog, get some good quality treats that are dog quality treats. They don't need to have turkey bones or turkey skin and so forth.
Well, we have to wrap it up.
We have to wrap it up. So it's K9, the number 9, advisors.com for Adele Mietes and Sable Chase Vet.
Actually, there's a better email address there. AskDrK@SableChaseAnimalClinic.com.
AskDrK@SableChase, and that's S-A-B-A-L, Chase Animal Clinic.
Yes.
Thanks so much
K.
for being with us, everybody, and thank you for listening and for calling in.
Thanks for having us.
And that wraps up our program. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Tomorrow at 1, it's online coverage of the Miami-Dade County School Board meeting. We return Thursday with a program which highlights the Florida and Miami-Dade Guardian Ad Litem program, also Linda Gassenheimer, and food and dining. We certainly want to thank you. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening. And also we'll be having Fred Tasker on hand on Thursday, of course, the wine columnist. This is Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, and saying goodbye to your pets. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.